This is Scorebook Live Today, a podcast about high school sports across the state of Washington. It's Thursday, February 13th, 2020. I'm Andy Bueller, Scorebook Live reporter. With me, the original crew is back together again. Todd Millis, Scorebook Live senior reporter, is on the line from Tacoma. Dan Dickow, Scorebook Live analyst, former NBA player, college basketball All-American, and college basketball TV analyst. Dan, you're joining from LA, where you know you've had a continued your busy season of calling games. How are things going in LA? I know you just landed, but are you going to get to enjoy it at all?
Yeah, I won't be enjoying the sunshine down here much at all. I've got some more Scorebook Live prep to do as we kind of gear up towards really closely following the playoffs before I head to the arena for BYU-LMU. But you know what? During the basketball season, I wouldn't have it any other way, following everything from high school to college and then watching pro games here and there. It's awesome.
BYU coaching staff was just in attendance at Skyview High School last week to check out Tanner Toulson, watch him hit a pretty tough buzzer beater to force overtime against Skyview. So good stuff. Todd, how you doing in Tacoma? You watched a couple good games last night.
Well, I'm happy to report I got through the state bowling. I'm glad you asked me about that. You know,
strikes and spares.
I think we talked about it last week. But no, it's nice to be back doing some basketball. I'll be front and center with Matt Classic a week from tomorrow in the Tacoma Dome, some state wrestling championships, and then from here on out, it's some pretty intense, important basketball. Both over here and on the east side. I'm looking forward to going back to the Sun Dome. I think the last time I was over there for state championships is when Luke Ridenour played for Blaine, so you guys do the math on that one.
Well, that would have been a while ago, even longer, or not quite as long as when I was in high school, but that must have been quite the spectacle. Luke was an unbelievable player at high school, great college, and then a good NBA career. And, you know, I saw him in the summertime when I was at GU and there was the Gonzaga team camps and his high school team Blaine was there and he was pretty darn good, but I heard that he was absolutely phenomenal during the season in leading those guys.
Yeah, I mean they beat
Todd, didn't you break his college commitment?
I did. Yeah. He had the hometown newspaper in his living room the day he was going to announce, and I was at a PLU football game, and I did a big story on him in the summer. I went up there and talked a lot of things, and I said, hey, the only thing I want is when you decide, just make sure I'm the, you know, call me. I didn't think he would call me before his hometown newspaper, but he did, and obviously had a pretty good career at Oregon. He was fantastic in the Yakima Sun Dome too, beating Clarkston and beating a good Wapato team. Those are two unbelievable state championship games.
My dad had a T-shirt or something along the lines of some sort of merch growing up that said Luke Both Ways, who's an Oregon alum, and that was kind of a slogan when Luke Jackson and Luke Ridenour were on the same team for the Ducks. So good stuff. Didn't realize we'd be spending our first 3.5 minutes talking about Luke Ridenour, but there's worse ways to start off the podcast. And I will now segue into a burning question I have for both of you guys that's not related to sports. Before we get into a full breakdown of the district tournaments across the state of Washington that are taking place right now, the girls' side in full swing. Most of the tournaments on the boys' side are as well. We've got breakdowns of each district tournament on the site, scorebooklive.com/Washington. But Dan, you just got off a flight today, and this is something that came across my timeline, as I'm sure many others on Twitter yesterday. It's a video shared by Marina Morocco. I believe she's a Miami-based, some sort of TV journalist, Fox 5. Shared a video of the back row of an airplane, woman's reclining her seat, and the man who cannot recline his seat directly behind her because he's in the back row is incessantly punching the seat And this is all happening on camera. Dan, I'm just going to assume that you weren't in the very back row of the plane, but did you have any antics like that on your flight? And do you guys have any opinions on whether there's a winner, a loser out of this situation?
I did see that, and I thought that was a little ridiculous. I mean, the person in the second to last row has to understand the person in the last row has the worst seat on the plane. And so that's a little selfish of her to lean back. But the gentleman, well, I guess you can't really call him a gentleman, the guy that kept repeatedly punching the back of the seat, in my opinion, was it completely in the wrong, although the lady had something to do with it as well.
Yep. Dan just said it.
that's some great stuff.
I never recline my seat ever. So, I feel the frustration of the guy in the back, but I don't think I would start punching. I don't think I would start punching the back of seats. You know, I mean, let's get real here.
Yeah, I think this is one of those situations where, you know, if there's a lesson learned, it's this is a prime example of how not to act when it comes to both people in both situations. So we live and we learn, I guess, and I hope those two people learn their lesson. So we're going to jump in. Like I said, district tournaments are getting going, and we're going to dive into some storylines that have piqued each of our interests. We're going to do that, and then after, we'll take a break, and when we come back, Dan spoke to number one Union at the 4A level, undefeated at this point, head coach Blake Conley, who's one of the bright coaching minds in the state of Washington. Really enjoyed that interview, and I think you will too. So that's coming on later in the show. But for now, district tournaments. Todd, you were up north last night at Seattle Pacific. You saw a really compelling Garfield girls game, and then perhaps just as compelling game between 1 and 2 on the boys' side, Eastside Catholic O'Day. They get a rematch. We'll get to some of the implications of those. You had great observations that's on the site right now that you wrote from both games. But was there anything in those games, especially on the girls' side, that stood out to you when it comes to determining which teams are fit to make a run at the state tournament? Who's the team to beat, and who's really impressed you at this point of the district playoffs?
Well, you talked about the two games I covered. They're actually in the Metro League tournament. Their Seeking District tournament will be next week. If you look at the 3A girls' side, you know, everybody's preseason pick was Garfield. And I think that was predicated on the fact that they had two Division I players, Megan Fiso, who was a transfer from West Seattle, and then obviously McDonald's All-American Delia Daniels. They've had some injuries, and they've been slow healing, especially for Delia Daniels. She suffered an ankle injury over the Christmas holiday in Arizona. She's been slow to recover. Talking to the staff up there, I didn't get the sense that they were optimistic that she would return to full health the remainder of the season. In fact, I think this is a situation they're going to monitor. She's been coming off the bench. She played about 13 to 14 minutes last night. I would suspect around, loser out games or, you got to win or go home type games that she's going to probably play more. She looked a lot healthier last night than when I saw her 2 weeks ago against Eastside Catholic. But I just don't see if she's not even a shell of herself, I don't see how Garfield, stays a favorite or a factor, to be honest with you. Not with that, a young but very mature Eastside Catholic team that's just steamrolling people right now. I mean, they have really kind of done what few thought they would in the Metro League this year, and just come in and play with youthful energy and bury people. Right now, I don't know if there's a team in 3A, maybe a Mount Spokane girls, maybe a Bethel. I mean, they certainly have the athletes, the experience, the star power at certain positions. But the thing about Eastside Catholic is they have youth, they have depth, they press you, they play with pace. I just, you know, right now Garfield has a lot of, in my mind, they have a lot of ground to make up, especially if Delea doesn't return to full health or can't give him more than 13 or 14 minutes a game. So that's kind of the impression I left watching them in their game with Seattle Prep last night, and that was a close Garfield win. On the boys' side, yeah, the O'Day Eastside Catholic, you guys had a chance to see them earlier in the year in the regular season. This was my first glimpse of Eastside Catholic in a couple years, and boy, oh boy, they put 53 points up on O'Day in the first half last night, and Nolan Hickman was fantastic. You know, John Calipari was in the stands. He was there to scout Paolo Banchero, but I tell you, it was a great night for Nolan Hickman to go off, especially him being part of the same class as Paolo. 53 points against an O'Day team that, quite frankly, I didn't think that would be possible. But right now, I just don't see how, A, O'Day can stop or slow down those guards, especially Nolan Hickman, and B, how they can keep Eastside Catholic under 65 points, which I think they would have to do in order to win a basketball game against them. Right now, I think they're searching for answers. Maybe they're playing possum. I know the Eastside Catholic folks sort of alluded to that last night, and Jason Kerr is a mastermind of that. But right now, I have more questions about how O'Day defends them than I do if Eastside Catholic can go win a state championship. Because right now, I think right now they're the team to beat. But I think there's probably some Garfield people out there that would disagree with me as well.
Well, here's my take on that. You mentioned some people are thinking maybe they're playing possum. Give me a break. Whoever says that, whoever's thinking that, whoever, you know, that you're being ridiculous, because no coach, no athlete, nobody that has a competitive bone in their body is going to lose a game on purpose, let alone a game that is going to continue to have implications as far as, you know, seeding and further playoffs. You know, you never want to give your an opponent, even if you're going to play them down the stretch, an edge in any way, shape, or form. And in watching some of those highlights and reading the stories you put together, Eastside Catholic put it on them. And so, you know, O'Day is going to have to kind of, you know, figure it out. Like, okay, you know what? What is our true game plan? How do we execute it? And how do we get it done? Now, they've got the talent to be able to get it done. But, you know, another win by Eastside Catholic is a big boost of confidence. To me, it'll be interesting, because I saw that game with Andy earlier in the year, and then I also saw Garfield. And I think Garfield's talented. Tari Eason's a good player, really good player. I think the X factor to them is going to be Corin Johnson, the young kid. He had a really good game the other night. I believe it was 7 threes, if I'm not mistaken. But I don't know if he's a point guard, if he's a two guard. So anytime you get further into a season in a high-pressure situation, at whatever league level it is, you need point guard play. And I think that's where Eastside Catholic gets the edge to me of all those three teams. Because I can't look at Garfield's roster and say, man, they got a point guard. I think they've got some really good players. And then that's the same thing with O'Day.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, Dan, you've seen them both play. Can O'Day win a high-scoring game against Eastside Catholic in your estimation? Because I can't see it.
You know, I think they can. I think the game that I saw, the outside shooting from O'Day was not there. They took a lot of them. And then their defensive rotation and balance was not good, allowing Eastside Catholic to get some runouts and to get out in transition quicker. I mean, if you're not going to hit jump shots where that slows the opponent down for a couple extra seconds, getting the ball out of the net, you're now allowed to get your defense back and set. If you're not going to make jump shots, you need to send guys back quickly in defensive transition balance, and they didn't do that. So the one thing, though, is they do have Paolo Banchero. And push comes to shove, what I've seen from him, you can put him at the point in stretches to be able to kind of you know, manage the game. I don't think you want to do it for the whole game because you're going to take him away from where he's absolutely dominant. But he's such a unique player. I think he could manage a game in stretches at the point guard position.
That's interesting you said that because he didn't score until the end of the first half yesterday. They moved him more to the point guard in the second quarter. He had 18 of the team's 22 points. And like you talked about, O'Day played him almost even in the second half and a lot of stretches with Paulo bringing the ball up and handling it up on the perimeter. I mean, he made four threes last night. I mean, Paulo was fantastic last night. He had 31. So and he wasn't disappointing, but the next highest score for O'Day was 5 points. And Christopoulos, again, didn't offer much, you know, scoring the basketball. So, but, you know, that's an interesting observation because they did it a lot last night. And that's the times they seem that O'Day seemed to have their most successes when Paulo kind of handled it at that position.
Yeah, and a lot of what that's going to do as well is, you know, the big fella, JT, I don't think he wants to pick up three-quarter court. Do you now put somebody like Hickman on Banchero or Noel on Banchero? You know, and if you do that, now all of a sudden one of your guards has the ability to attack a mismatch in space. So, you know, that's interesting. I think that'd be definitely something to keep an eye on if they do match up again, which all points indicate that that will happen at some point this year.
These are two teams that could play next week, like, you know, Todd was saying. Seeking district tournament hasn't started yet. They've, you know, they're playing in the Metro League tournament for seeding. And if they face each other in the state tournament, like the two teams did last year in the state semifinals, you know, these are going to be two teams that have basically seen everything that the other has to offer. Now, O'Day is an 11 seed last year. We saw Paulo Banchero turn it up to a completely different notch in the postseason. We saw them do that, I believe, largely without John Christopoulos. And he's when Dan, you talk about shooting, he's going to be a factor going forward for them, whether he can create shots, whether he can hit shots, whether they can find him open outside. So, you know, we talk about playing possum, and Dan, you casted doubts on that. At the same time, I know when Eastside beat O'Day at home in the regular season, the first time they played, the first thing that I asked Brent Merritt after the game and some of the players were, you know, is this validating, beating this team? And it was a resounding, individually from every one of them, no, because we did this last year and they still beat us in the state tournament. So we'll be interested to see this saga. I mean, it's certainly good for basketball fans, especially in the Seattle area. They get a lot of good basketball if these teams end up playing next week. So exciting storylines to follow in the Metro League. One that district tournament that I'll really be looking forward to is the 4A Wesco Kinko District 1-2 tournament. You've got two teams in Mount Si and Glacier Peak that I think are probably going to meet in the finals of that tournament. I hope they do. Selfishly, as somebody who, you know, Dan and I do our top 25 every week, our all classification top 25 across the state, and you know, a great determiner of how to rank teams, where to put teams on a week in and week out basis is if top 25 teams play each other. And Glacier Peak sitting here undefeated, they survived a double OT game against Mariner last week to remain undefeated. A couple big shots by, I believe it was Isaac Lee, if I'm getting that wrong, I'm sorry, to the Glacier Peak listeners out there. But Glacier Peak's a good team, really balanced, and they've really taken care of business up there in that league. So they'll face a Mount Si team that was, you know, made a deep run in the state tournament last year, brought back a lot of talent, and I think is still looking for that signature win. Took a couple of losses early in the season that they really reflected on and felt like they were better than. So that would be a great test and a great determiner for which one of those teams could make a deep run in the state tournament. The next district that I want to focus on is the one that I think I'm just glad these teams are finally playing each other, and that's the GSL MCC District 8 tournament. We've already seen some fireworks early. Our video producer, Gray Reed, was at the Gonzaga Prep game last night. Gonzaga Prep took care of business against Richland. And then Chiawana hosts Ferris. Ferris takes them down to the wire, game tied in the final seconds. I believe they went to overtime last year in the same district tournament. And Cooper DeWitt hits his second game-winning three at the buzzer to send Chiawana into a much-anticipated matchup against, I believe they play Central Valley. Double-check that. But the MCC, they play each other so much, and their league and conference play is so dominant of their entire schedule that it's really exciting from a statewide level to look at them and just kind of to have these teams measure up against one another here in the district tournament. It'll be interesting to see a deep MCC match up against some teams in the greater Spokane League. Dan, is there a matchup there that you're really looking for or something that you're kind of looking for a team to prove in that District 8 tournament?
Well, I think, you know, the east side of the state always tends to get less recognition and or respect from the west side. And I get it. I grew up on the west side down in Vancouver. And down there, we always wanted recognition from Seattle-Tacoma area schools, you know. And I think now the GSHL is viewed as if not the best 4A league in the state. And so there's very much respect level there. But, you know, I think the fact that the state is so spread out amongst your big school teams, even in the summers, you don't get a lot of chances to play against west side versus east side teams, other than maybe Craig Jackson's great tournament that he runs at Franklin in the summers, maybe at GU Team Camp, which is one of the biggest high school team camps on the West Coast. There's still not a crazy amount of chance to kind of match up and play each other a lot. So there's kind of an unknown factor. You know, but I will say, you know, Mount Spokane, from what I have seen, is the class of the 3A level on the east side. Kamiya Kin, I think, is solid from all indications. You know, at the 4A level, it's Benji Prep and Richland. And Richland's down. Chiawana's had a heck of a year. You know, but until... you know, it's one of those things where, and I hate to say this, but there's just more basketball opportunities to be seen, to play each other, to compare each other over on the west side. So it's much easier to vouch for or really kind of go to bat for teams that you've seen as opposed to teams that you've heard about but you haven't seen in person. So I think there's that mystery factor for teams on the east side that maybe come playoff time, maybe come state tournament time, they can surprise a few people.
Oh, totally. And Todd and I, in our trip out to Tri-Cities last month, you know, we saw Chiawana and Kennewick play. Chiawana took care of them. I believe they swept Kennewick in both matchups. But Kennewick's Ayani Benavidez is the leading scorer in the MCC. Kennewick's a team that's had some good wins this year and I believe is, you know, finished second in the 3A MCC. Well, they get Mount Spokane tomorrow night, Friday, as we're recording this. That's going to be a really good matchup. We're going to learn a lot from that game. And let's not forget, this District 8, there's two berths to state that come out of this district, and it's a deep MCC. This is a team, a league where you have, you know, Tristan Smith at Southridge. You know, you've got some good players at Walla Walla. You've got teams that made it so that, you know, realistically, anyone could beat anyone on any given night. So we'll certainly be looking forward to that. Would like to make an amendment to an earlier comment I made. Chiawana now gets Gonzaga Prep, so Liam Lloyd and the Bullpups and Hodges Fleming, who's come on as a scorer in the second half of the season, has been pretty impressive. That should be a good game. They play tomorrow night. I don't want to forget a district tournament that won't start playing till maybe we even record our next podcast. but the Big Nine District Tournament, which sticks inside of their league, they have two berths that come out of that tournament. They start playing on the 18th. West Valley of Yakima is a 4A team that poked into our rankings in the last couple of weeks at the all-class top 25. And they're a team that I'd really like to see go up against, some of the teams in the MCC, some of the teams in the GSL, because they really haven't played anyone outside of their league, outside of early big loss to Kamiakin, I believe a big loss to Mount Spokane. John Kinlock, a head coach at West Valley, who I was talking to for a while yesterday, he was just saying, they're playing themselves into form right now. A good 7-1 center prospect in Connor Turner that the state really hasn't heard a whole lot about. He's averaging 11.5 points a game, 6 rebounds a game. Logan Kinlock, a guard who can really throw it down. That's a fun roster that's well-coached that I'm certainly looking forward to seeing them play some teams out of their area. We might need to wait till the regional round of the state tournament.
Yeah, we have the conversation about east side versus west side a second ago, but, that gap in the middle of the state also tends to get lost. And I know John Kinlock well. He played at Gonzaga a little bit before me, but he really likes his basketball club. He's got a great shooter in his son, Logan Kinlock. Anytime you've got a 7-footer, even though his numbers don't jump off the page at you, you really have to kind of game plan for it at the high school level, because he can be an impact player on the defensive end on the glass.
Sure, and that district tournament's going to be a good opportunity, too, to see if a team like Eastmont, led by their guard Isaac Wellborn, or a Garrett Long, led Wenatchee, can make a run, or even, a Moses Lake with Kyle Karstetter. Can one of these teams, I predicted in our district tournament breakdowns that are set to publish on the boys' side, I think I predicted Wenatchee and West Valley to come in and secure those two berths. But if West Valley's got one of them, who's the other going to go to? Is Wenatchee's got to play their way. They got to play a couple extra games based on seeding to get there. So just the product of the time of year it is, and we haven't even really touched on District 4, which is an entire can of worms. It's just such a big tournament with so many teams in Todd's neck of the woods. But Todd, do you feel like there's anything that we missed, or anything that you'd like to tack on to any of the points we made?
Well, 4A girls, as our listeners know, I'm predominantly the girls basketball contact for Scorebook Live, and the 4A district tournaments offer a little bit of everything, and you guys touched on a little bit on the boys' side in some of these geographic areas. Now, if you want the blockbuster matchup, if you want to go see two really good teams play each other that can win state championships, I would venture up north. I would go up to the Kinko-Wesco tournament. If you get a Glacier Peak and a Woodinville playing. We have those two teams as our top two teams in 4A. I would be shocked if those two teams aren't playing for a district championship, and they have not played this year. Both teams like to run. Two teams with really good point guards, and Aaliyah Collins at Glacier Peak and Veronica Sheffy at Woodinville. If I could send my grandpa or grandma up to see one girls game this year out of the area, that's the game I would send them to. But there are a lot of other things going on around the state. If you want suspense, go down to the District 3 tournament. There are five or six teams that can win down here in the North Puget Sound League, SPSL, GSHL. It wouldn't surprise me if Rogers of Puyallup or Kent Ridge or Beamer or Bellarmine Prep or even a Union in Skyview. It wouldn't surprise me at all if any of those teams made a run and won a district championships. That's how balanced that district is. And then you can look at kind of the unknown. Chiawana girls were upset early in their district tournament. You just don't really know how to read what's going on over there in the GSL and the MCC. It's not gone according to plan in Spokane. I think many people picked University Girls with their four Division I players to win that league, and Central Valley has done a fantastic job, defensive-oriented approach. They've kind of locked people down and maybe sort of emerged as the best team over there in 4A, especially with now Chiawana having to fight to get through their district tournament and earn a regional berth. So, I mean, there's a lot of interesting things going on in 4A districts. The one thing I like about 4A districts is there's a lot of depth in 4A this year. There are 14 or 15 teams that deserve spots in the Tacoma Dome. You're going to have to play really, really well in any one of those district tournaments to get through to regionals and ultimately back to the Tacoma Dome here in a few weeks.
No doubt. And the best way, in my view, and I think you guys would agree, to follow along with some of these district games, a ton of them are being scored on Scorebook Live's live scoring app. I followed along Puyallup and Skyview the other night. Of course, Gonzaga Prep, Richland last night, Battleground the other night, and we'll be following along if I don't catch their game against Skyview tomorrow. But a great way to stay tuned on the run when you don't have the opportunity to sit down, pay for a subscription to watch a stream or go to the game yourself, the Scorebook Live scoring app, I think, is the way to go. Another thing I want to mention is that right now at this point, this week, we're seeing a lot of results of district or league coaches' meetings, a lot of league all-league teams being published. I'm sure you'll see more to come in the coming days and into next week and you know, even beyond. And that kind of gets us really paying close attention to who we are considering for our all-state teams, which we're going to be doing after the season. We put our minds together every week and really go over the top performers across the state, the most meaningful players, the most impactful players, the players who have made the biggest jumps, and the ones that are leading their teams into the postseason, which, you know, has a pretty big bearing on when we decide to put those teams together, is how do you play at the end of the season? So Dan and I on the boys' side, Todd and Freddie on the girls' side are going to be looking to taking lots of notes of what's going on in preparation for our Scorebook Live All-State teams. I'm looking forward.
Absolutely. You know, it's been really interesting to see some of our picks that, you know, we made early in the season for Elite 11, how they've fared. It's been interesting to see, you know, we released top shooters and different lists like that, you know, how they've fared. And then also some of the guys that we missed on, quite frankly, you know, talking to different coaches throughout the fall and say, hey, you know what, this kid might be deserving of being on a list like that. But maybe another kid had three or four coaches, and so you kind of like, you're hesitant. And so it's always that. That's one of the beautiful things about sports is, you know, you just never know. And especially at the age of high school sports, you know, the unpredictability of it is just really, really fun to watch.
No question. And that's another thing that I honestly completely forgot about, is that we're going to be going back and re-ranking our boys and girls top 50 of the season. We didn't actually rank them at the beginning of the season, just named 50 players to watch, which you can find now on scorebooklive.com/Washington. But going back and re-ranking those at the end of the season is going to be you know, a great thought exercise, a great evaluation that I'm looking forward to. And, you know, I'm sure we'll go over it plenty on this very podcast, but I'm sure that there will be some crow eaten for kids that we've slept on, who or players who had, you know, tremendous seasons. So this podcast, this very podcast, you can subscribe to so that each week you don't have to do anything. It automatically downloads to your smartphone, tablet, computer, wherever you get your podcasts. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher are just some examples of that. Look up Scorebook Live today on any of those streaming services and hit subscribe to our podcast. Leave us a review. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you don't like. Give us nice compliments or don't. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Dan talks to Blake Conley of the undefeated Union Titans. Stick with us.
Washington Federal is a bank based in Seattle that operates 235 branches, and it cares deeply about high school sports not only in the Seattle metro area, but across the entire state of Washington. Head to WashingtonFederal.com to learn more or visit your closest branch. Follow along with the most impactful high school sports stories across the state of Washington on Scorebook Live Washington's statewide website. It covers high school athletics across all corners of the state. We've started a newsletter to make it easier than ever to read. From news, features, weekly rankings, podcasts, highlights, interviews, and more, head to www.scorebooklive.com/Washington on your desktop, mobile device, tablet. Scroll to the right side of your homepage and subscribe by entering your email address to our 3 times a week newsletter. That way you'll get the day's top headlines to your inbox at no charge at all. Scorebooklive.com/Washington.
Dan Dickow, Scorebook Live, Washington, here with coach from Union, the Titans, out of the GSHL down in the Vancouver, Washington area, at the coach's corner for the Scorebook Live podcast. Coach, seventh year at Union. You took over a program from Mako Hamilton, who won a state title in 2010. You've had second place, third place, fourth place finishes. This might be your year. Talk to a number of coaches throughout the state, and they really like how your ball club approaches the game. They like the changes that you make in-game as well as week-to-week. How has the season shaped up for you down in Vancouver?
Well, obviously it's been a great season. You know, can't say otherwise. We've kind of played a different style this year. We've been a lot more up-tempo. You know, we were pretty conservative defensively, you know, in the past, just based on some personnel stuff. We kind of realized this year that we had a team that could pressure a little bit more and just could play a little bit different style. So it was big that we had success early, so the guys, you know, would buy into that. But, you know, right away, I think they realized it was a good style for us. And, you know, fortunately, it's been good for us. So I've been pleased with the growth along the way. But, you know, we've had a lot of tough games that hopefully prepare us for a playoff run here.
You know, coaches a lot of times are creatures of habit, and sometimes that means a philosophy that maybe they learned from one coach and they're not comfortable breaking out of that habit. But in hearing you talk about your team and the willingness to get up and down and play a really fast style, is that something that you had to rely upon and lean on other coaches that maybe have mentored you to kind of learn about how you wanted to implement that, or how did you come about with that change?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think offensively I was always fine. We always played pretty high games, you know, here at Union, just with the kind of kids that we get, the skilled guards, and, you know, fast shooters, and you know, kids that can do a lot of different things. But it's more the defense, I think, that's been a big change for me. We've kind of been, you know, sprinkling a little bit of pressures along the way, but just, you know, pack line and be solid, scout the other team really well. And that was kind of my philosophy. So, you know, talking to, you know, some other coaches, you know, around the state, as well as, you know, some of my assistant coaches. You know, luckily I have an assistant coach who's Todd Spike, who's been here since the school started. And, you know, obviously Mako Hamilton, who I inherited the program from, was a huge press guy. So I've kind of leaned on Coach Spike here, just in my own building, just to kind of just see how that's going to be and what we can expect when we are pressing all the time, getting up and down, and, you know, maybe give up a couple of easier shots here and there. But the tempo and just the speed and with our depth and just overall skill set, I think it's been really good. So yeah, I definitely it still feels a little bit different than that we have been pressing so much, but it's obviously been good for us.
You guys are a team who plays in one of the best leagues at the 4A level in the state, the GSHL. But you're also a coach in a program that's not shy to go out and play against other really good programs. You played at Mount Si early this year. You hosted Gonzaga Prep, and then you played North Kitsap as well, which is having a great year at the 2A level, and a lot of coaches I've talked to felt that they are one of the best teams regardless of classification. Is that because of the new RPI system that the WIA is really putting a lot of emphasis on, or do you as a competitor just want to give your team the most opportunities to play in big games?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously, you know, the RPI matters, but we were scheduling that way, you know, before the RPI started. You know, Mako did that before. You know, I remember when I first got here, you know, I inherited, you know, the program, and I looked at the schedule, and I said, wow, we got a bear of a schedule, and people said, yeah, that's what we do here at Union. So I love it. The kids love it. They like getting out of the area, and so, yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, if you drop a couple games, you know, playing great competition, we believe that, you know, prepares us for the playoffs and prepares you to, you know, be better along the way. And also, you know, hopefully you find some adversity. And we definitely have that in some of our games that we played in the non-league this year. And, you know, we think we're better prepared, you know, come playoffs for having played, you know, great teams, you know, like the Gonzaga Preps and, you know, Mount Size and North Kitsap. So
I'm a big believer in just staying with the grind of the workouts and getting better and seeing improvement. And unfortunately, in this day and age, too many kids get frustrated when they don't see success early. You guys at your school in your program have a tremendous example of somebody who has stuck with it, continued to work, and is really maybe the front runner for 4A class of the year. Tanner Toulson, I saw him play this summer at the WIBCA Showcase, and I was really impressed. The highlights and the clips that I've seen since has shown me that he's taken another step in his game. Talk a little bit about his journey as a high school basketball player in your program and the opportunity he's going to have to play at the college level.
Yeah, so Tanner, his dad played in the NBA for, I believe, 2.5 years. So we knew that he, you know, moved in the boundaries, and they reached out. And so we kind of had these high expectations. And then when this 5'6", gangly little kid came in, and we were a little bit surprised. And, you know, dad said that he was a late bloomer. But even from the start when he was that kid, he was such a hard worker, such a great kid, so coachable. And that's a testament to him and his family, just in how he was raised. As he progressed, you know, he was a freshman on the C team. We had three sophomores on varsity that year. He was not one of them his sophomore year, and he never complained. He just kept at it, just kept competing, kept working, and then he made this big jump his junior year, which was really cool to see. But he didn't change as a person. He didn't change his work ethic. It was just this, you know, this kid who loved being in the gym, who loved, you know, working in the weight room, who was a great teammate. Just, it's like he transferred, and then all of a sudden junior year, he's, you know, he's dunking, and he's, you know, he's always a great shooter, but he's able to move better. And so and then he just continued. He's been the same kid all 4 years. It has not changed him, and the success that he's had, you know, so it's been really cool to see. He deserves all the credit that he is getting. He's an awesome teammate. He cares about the team success first. You know, all those coaching cliches about great players that we all have, we all want in kids. He really is those things. You know, the recruiting is, you know, continued to heat up. Utah State, one of his schools that he said he's really liked, and would really love to have the opportunity to play on Sunday. They just reached out, so we've been in contact with them, and so it's been cool to see just even throughout this year, as our season has progressed, you know, getting more and more calls, and, you know, having these doors open up. It's kind of an interesting situation because he's an LDS kid, so he will be going on his 2-year mission 2 years after high school. So it's like he's like almost a 2022 kid. So in the recruiting, I think the colleges know that. So I think they kind of opens up a little bit more opportunities for him. And it's also the timeline is not as urgent with other kids, since he will be doing a 2-year mission.
Yeah, it's a tremendous story, and I think it's something that, you know, if there are kids that listen to these podcasts, which I know there are, you know, even if they have some struggles early in their high school career, keep working at it, keep plugging away at it, and good things can happen. Unfortunately for your program and one of your players, you know, their season has kind of come to a little bit of a screeching halt. I saw Brad Lackey this summer at the WIBCA Showcase, same place I saw Tanner Toulson, and I was impressed. I thought he was a leader on the floor. He had command of the game. And this is at an event where it's hard to do those kind of things and stand out. What's the latest on him, and is he going to be out for the season? And what did he bring to your ball club, and how are you going to replace that?
Yeah, so there was a doctor, a really well-respected doctor around here in Vancouver that was at the game, and we trust him, and he was pretty adamant that, you know, that it is an ACL tear. He got an MRI. He's actually probably going to get the results here in the next day or two, just to confirm. But, I mean, if a miracle happens, that's amazing. But we're planning, and I think he's even, you know, we've come to terms with the fact that he's probably not going to be on the court for us. And in terms of on the court and just who he is, I told somebody he's the ultimate type. He's been a kid that has just been such a program guy and just so coachable, such a great leader, so positive even through this injury, just to see his positivity, to see how he's contributing, you know, coaching up other guys at practice, or, you know, the other day he did his own clips on huddle to prepare for one of our opponents that he wanted to show. And it's just, you know, and that's the kind of kid that he is on the court, his leadership and his energy, his positivity. His basketball IQ. He's really an extension of the coaching staff out there. So we're really going to miss that. You know, he'll be helping out in another respect. But, and, you know, the points and the assists and, you know, how hard he worked on defense, that's going to be missed. But just his overall leadership is something that it's hard to replace. But we know that he's, you know, he's helping out as much as he can right now and just keep staying positive. And if he can stay positive through all this, then, you know, us as the coaching staff and his teammates, who we all miss him on the court, but we need to do that. Same thing, just follow his example.
A lot of times coaches can be nitpicky, which is another reason the best coaches get the most out of their players and their teams, because they're looking for something. With a short amount of the season left, and I know you guys want to bring the first state title during your tenure to Union, where do you guys most need to improve over the next couple weeks for that to happen?
You know, it's kind of getting used to, you know, having this guy who we've, you know, has been such a big piece of the puzzle. And it's almost like, that's why it was so great to play such a quality team like Skyview the other day, is we got to see kind of what we need to work on, who we are without him. We got so comfortable in who we were as a team and some of the things that we can do. And, you know, I told the guys, it is going to be harder without a guy like Brad Lack. You can't lie and say it isn't, but we still have a really strong team. We're going to have to, he was playing 24 minutes a game for us, so we're going to have guys step up, and I think we got the guys that can do that, you know, but just to continue to be tough on the boards, you know, and just trust each other, and I think that's going to be a big one off offensively, just continue to take care of the basketball. We've looked at, you know, the last three games at the Tacoma Dome this year and the year before that, we've had a lot more turnovers than our averages were. So taking care of the basketball is going to be a big one. I think all teams, if you know, the team that takes care of the ball in the playoffs, the team who rebounds, those are the ones who go far in advance. So we know that those are focuses for us. And then just, you know, play tight basketball. You know, although we're not reinventing, you know, what we've done all year. There are some adjustments we need to make without Brad, but just stay positive, play as a team, play for each other, you know, do those things, and we'll have a shot.
Well, Coach, we appreciate the time. We look forward to following your Union Titan Ball Club these next few weeks. We look forward to all the playoff races across the state, and wish you guys nothing but the best of luck.
Thanks a lot, Dan. Appreciate what you guys are doing for kids. You guys have got great coverage, and this is a great thing. So we appreciate you guys giving the recognition and all the things that Scoreback Live has done with all the newspapers, you know, having big cuts. It's cool to see you guys provide the content you're providing.